This is Radio Boston. I'm Carrie Goldberg, in for Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. The catastrophic explosion of a freight train last weekend in Quebec has raised fresh questions here in New England and across the nation about the safety of rail lines and the transportation of oil and other hazardous cargo.
As many as 50 people are dead or still missing 5 days after a runaway train loaded with crude oil jumped the tracks and exploded in a series of enormous fireballs, devastating the center of the village of Lac-Mégantic, just north of the main border.
The tragedy has focused attention on the growing reliance of trains to haul increasing amounts of oil across New England and around the country. According to the American Association of Railroads, just 5 years ago, trains hauled about 10,000 carloads of crude. Last year, they hauled almost 25 times that amount. So the question is, are rail lines safe to carry such a load? Was the Lac-Mégantic tragedy an aberration or a warning?
In a moment, we'll talk about the nation's growing thirst for oil and railway safety here in New England. But first, an update from Lac-Mégantic, Quebec. We're joined by Daniel Bitonti, a reporter for The Globe and Mail. He's been covering the tragedy in Quebec for the past few days and joins us now from the village. Daniel, are you with us?
Yes. Hi. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for joining us. So walk us through the scene up there, if you could. What are you seeing today? Is everyone just reeling?
Well, it's not so much reeling yet because we don't have, we've only got the information that the name of one victim has been released to the family, and the media still doesn't even know who that is. So we're still working on that. Like you said, there's expected to be about 50 people who died, and I think there's still a sense in this town, while anger is kind of has bubbled over at certain situations. For instance, during the press conference when the chairman arrived yesterday, we still don't see that sense of immense grief yet, because I think the town is still in shock and they haven't come to the full realization, and we haven't really seen, nobody's seen the downtown. We're still, the police barricade is still hundreds, maybe about 100 meters away from the crash site, and there's and our visibility is blocked, so we, that sense of what really happened, it still hasn't hit home, I don't think, here.
You can't get close. So that chairman that you mentioned was Edward Burkhart, right? The head of the Montreal, Maine and Atlantic Railway. He made his first appearance in town yesterday. And when he was pressed by reporters about the cause of the disaster, he said it's still being investigated, and he stopped short of accepting full responsibility for the conflagration. Here's what he said.
Because while we gather those facts, it doesn't mean we're not accepting responsibility. Those are two different subjects.
Do you think there's any responsibility that you should take?
We think we have plenty of responsibility here. Whether we have a total responsibility is yet to be determined. We have plenty of it.
Huh, Daniel. So how are people reacting to that? And what do we know about how this happened?
I mean, again, as he said, it's still under investigation. And so some of the other comments that he made seem to suggest that the engineer who was responsible for putting on handbrakes on the train, on the locomotive, didn't do his job, and that he has been suspended. And he also said that this engineer will likely not work for the company anymore. I think in a lot of ways, it was quite an interesting scene yesterday. I mean, this is... you know, I'm an Anglophone Canadian, well, an English-speaking Canadian from Ontario, and coming in, you know, these are fellow Canadians of mine, and I still feel sometimes like I'm in a foreign country, because this is rural Quebec, and now you have an American railway tycoon of sorts coming into this rural Quebec town with just really by himself, and you know, coming in, there were some insults being hurled from the back of the press conference. One man, for instance, said he came down who had lost two daughter-in-laws and his son, saying that he came down to see the person who killed his children. So that was where we started to see a lot of emotion yesterday. But we still don't know a lot about what exactly happened. The engineer who was on the train. We haven't spoken to him yet. We haven't been able to find him. And so there's still a lot of questions that investigators are working on.
Yeah, it sounds like many questions still to be answered. It sounds like there's also some finger pointing going back and forth between the firemen and the railroad staff.
Yeah, and that was very early on when after the crash. Mr. Burkhardt accused firemen of releasing brakes, certain braked air brakes, and back and there's been a lot of back and forth. So I mean, right now, even 5 days in, there's a lot more questions than answers, and I think that, I mean, we have a lot more questions about who these. We have a sense that it's likely going to be 50 victims or more, but we still don't have the confirmation on almost all of them. We still don't have any names. Police have not released any names that confirmed names of confirmed victims.
Right. So this tragic story will continue. Well, Daniel Bitanti is a reporter for the Globe and Mail. He's been covering the latest from Lac Mégantic, Quebec. Daniel, thanks so much for joining us.
No, thank you for having me on.
According to an article in the Boston Globe this week, there are more than 2,000 miles of rail lines here in New England, and they regularly handle shipments of crude oil like the one that blew up in Quebec. The oil comes from the shale fields in North Dakota, runs through Massachusetts, New Hampshire, and Maine to an oil refinery in St. John, New Brunswick. So given what happened in Quebec, is there reason to be concerned that this represents a risk here in New England and elsewhere in the country? Well, we're joined by a couple of people who can help us answer that. Christopher Parker is the executive director of Vermont Rail Action Network. That's a grassroots movement promoting the revitalization of Vermont's rail network. And Christopher Parker, thanks for joining us. We really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Also with us is Kate Colarulli. She's deputy director of the Sierra Club's Beyond Oil campaign, and she joins us from Washington, D.C. And Kate Colarulli, welcome to you. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks.
Well, I'll start with you, Kate. We cited a statistic about the rapid increase in the amount of crude oil being shipped by rail around the country. One statistic, it increased more than 2,000% between 2009 and 2012. What explains this rapid increase?
Well, we've seen a tremendous increase in the amount of oil that's being produced in our country and in Canada. And with that comes increased risks, both at, you know, the well sites for those communities and then also for those that live along the lines that we, you know, in which we move crude. So from these places, which were already mentioned, you know, the Canadian tar sands fields, and then the Bakken in North Dakota and that part of our country, the increased oil is now moving out to refineries and out to ports where it can be shipped all around the world. And so for communities such as many New England communities that live along the pipeline routes or the rail routes, live near the refineries or the export ports, I would say that yes, there is an increased risk that with this increased production, there may be increased opportunities for such terrible tragedies.
Mm. And Christopher Parker, we heard Kate there talking about this increase in crude oil shipments. Presumably the rail infrastructure was built a while ago. Is it up to this increase in traffic?
Well, the rail doesn't know or care whether it's moving lumber or crude oil. So the same standards for 100 tons of crude oil apply to 100 tons of other traffic.
Mm. So wait, say more about that. I'm not sure I follow you. I mean, in terms of increase, so you're saying it doesn't make a difference that the traffic increases?
The tracks are safe for the tonnage that's moving, and in terms of what the tonnage is, doesn't change the safety factor.
I see. So are they, I mean, let's talk a little bit about sort of reaction to this tragedy in Quebec. I mean, do you see it as an aberration or does it suggest a need for concern?
This was the culmination of a series of unlikely events, as are most bad accidents. The train has multiple breaks and the fire department shut down one and the handbrakes, apparently, it seems to be suggested, weren't enough. That's an unusual occurrence.
Yeah.
The key number, I think, to get out there is that for pipelines, they spill 6.3 gallons per million ton miles. Rails spill 2.2 gallons per ton miles. So what I take from that is, yes, there's risk, but it's relatively managed. I mean, there's risk in anything. We drive, and that is risky.
Sure. Kate Colarulli, go ahead, respond to that.
Say, if you don't mind me jumping in here.
Please do.
I think that Chris is making a really excellent point, right? Lumber and wood is not the same as oil, and there's different risks, human risks, health risks, livelihood risks that come from moving and using oil, right? So one of the terrible parts about my job is that I work all around the country and have to watch as these communities are devastated by some type of oil transportation spill. So a couple months ago, I was in Mayflower, where I was talking with mothers and fathers that were really concerned because their children had been exposed to a big pipeline spill of tar sands, and there's all sorts of respiratory illnesses, rashes, skin diseases, cancers that come from being exposed to oil when it's not on fire, much less when it's on fire like up in Quebec. So I think what we need to be thinking about isn't so much like, should we pick between pipeline disasters or rail car disasters? It should be about, how do we reduce our dependence on oil and thereby reduce our risk of coming into contact with oil?
Mm. Listeners, we want to hear from you in this conversation. Do you worry about railway safety when it comes to hauling oil or other dangerous cargo for that matter? Do you live near a rail line? Do you wonder if it's safe? And what does the tragedy of Quebec say about our appetite for oil, as Kate Colarulli was just suggesting there? You can give us a call at 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. Christopher Parker, I want to come to you, and sort of follow up on what Kate was talking about. This idea that, you know, there is this huge debate in the country right now about whether to build the Keystone Pipeline, for example, from Canada to the U.S. Some say pipelines are safer than trains, while pipeline spills might be bigger. Train accidents tend to happen right in populated areas. So what are your thoughts about that and your response to some of the concerns that Kate was just raising there?
Well, Kate's right. Petroleum is an issue in our society, and that's, that's something we have to grapple with. Interestingly, railroads are in the position of reducing our petroleum use for shipments. But there's no question there's a risk.
Yeah, there is a risk. Kate, go ahead. Go ahead, Christopher.
What we can talk about is how to manage that risk, what railroads do.
Well, let's talk about that. And Kate, I'll come back to you because, I think you raise a fair point that increasing our dependence on oil, obviously an important priority, but that's not going to happen overnight. And in the meantime, there's going to be a big need to move oil all over the place. So how do we reduce that risk?
Well, so I think there's a couple things that I can talk about specifically focused on New England. So the first is that, last year we passed historic fuel economy standards in this country. And by just increasing our fuel economy by 2.5 miles per gallon, we completely eliminate the need for the Keystone XL pipeline, right? So, and the fuel economy standards that were passed are actually going to double the fuel economy of our cars. So investing in smarter cars, more efficient cars, in hybrids, in electric vehicles has tremendous potential to reduce the risk of these sorts of petroleum accidents.
Mm.
Additionally, New England is one of these lovely parts of our country that is incredibly well connected. And there's lots of different ways in which people can move that reduce oil use. Trains, bikes, subways, there's all these different ways. And so when people look at their livelihood, their lifestyle, the majority of trips, for example, that we take every day are under a mile. And we can look at just simple solutions like carpooling more, combining chores so that we're doing one trip to a number of stores as opposed to doing multiple. These are ways in which we can really have a dramatic impact on how much oil that each of us consumes every day.
Hmm. And Christopher Parker, let me come back to you. And just, I want to ask a specific question about what happened in Quebec, or at least what we understand happened in
mm-hmm.
Quebec. Because, I take your point that there is risk involved, but, that seems a little too sort of easy to dismiss this as, this happened and everything is risky. Here's a case of a 75-car long train carrying crude oil where my understanding is there was one engineer who applied the brakes incorrectly and then went to sleep in a hotel. And this idea of a 75-car train carrying crude oil just being left on the tracks overnight, it seems disturbing to the average person. I just want to understand, is that standard operating procedure? Would that happen on the rail lines in Vermont or elsewhere in New England?
Think of it like a tractor trailer that pulls into a motel or something and puts on its parking brake. If it's a tractor trailer full of gasoline, that truck is left unattended, but you have an expectation that it's going to stay put. And there was that expectation, which was, did not happen. But there are procedures to tie the trains down.
So clearly someone didn't follow procedures, and if we're to believe the chairman of the company, that engineer won't be working there much longer. But Christopher, another question to you. What sort of regulation is this sort of freight subject to? Is this a state-by-state regulation, or is this a federal matter?
It's federal. The Federal Railroad Administration has inspectors that monitor conditions and show up unannounced and make sure that things are going well. And then there's also the rule structure of the companies themselves. So we're not talking about, you and I can just drive onto the interstate once we've got our license, and unless we get pulled over, we can just do what we want. But there's a structure in place that involves employment and people watching out on the railroad. And that's why the railroad is, in fact, so much safer than highways.
Mm. And Kate, getting beyond your point, or maybe previous to your point reducing our dependence on oil, does the tragedy in Quebec, in your view, does it sound like an aberration to you, or does it suggest the need for concern, for tighter regulations, for something like that?
Yeah, I mean, in my experience, I've noticed over the last several years that we continue to have accidents. Fortunately, not many of them are as tragic as what we think the Quebec one is going to be. But I do think it's worth pointing out that that's actually a pretty small train.
75 cars, you mean.
Yep, yeah. They're much bigger expectations. The rail industry has been, crowing about the profits to be made in shipping crude and the huge expanses that they see coming across this country. Dozens and dozens of articles over the last year. So I have to say, from the human, from the thinking about the human side of this, I would be in the camp that suggests we need to look much more closely at how crude oil is regulated when it's being moved.
Mm. And specifically, I mean, can you give me sort of ideas that you're thinking of? What sort of increased regulation would you favor?
Well, I feel like that's actually probably a better question for Christopher, who's much more familiar with what level of regulation or non-regulation. I don't have a lot of comfort in thinking
sure.
that this is left to companies.
All right. Well, let me put that to Christopher. Christopher, I mean, are you comfortable with the level of regulation that's there?
I am. I know people who work for the FRA, and they know what they're doing.
The FRA, the Freight Rail Association.
The Federal Railroad Administration.
Federal
yeah.
Railroad,
they,
right.
I respect them.
Right. So sort of, I guess, let me just push you finally with this. I mean, any lessons at all come out of the tragedy in Quebec? What are they, Christopher?
Well, you would expect that there would be lessons, because clearly something needs to change. It may be a bit premature because we don't know the full results. I would suggest, just thinking about it, it's probably procedures for handbrakes, some sort of double check procedure, for instance. The railroads have a double-check procedure about switches, and maybe for hazardous material there should be that kind of double-check situation.
All right. Well, Christopher Parker, Executive Director of the Vermont Rail Action Network, thanks so much for joining us. We appreciate it today. It's an important conversation. We appreciate your participation.
Thank you for having me.
And Kate Colarulli, Deputy Director of the Sierra's Club Beyond Oil campaign. Kate, thank you for your help today as well. We're very grateful.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
And listeners, stay with us. Coming up, Alistair Mook writes music with a message of hope for kids fighting cancer, including his own. I'm Anthony Brooks with Carrie Goldberg. This is Radio Boston.